Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I'm asking you once again what I've asked of you from the moment we began this journey. I'm asking you to believe, not just in my ability to bring about change, but in yours. Because we've got a lot of work to do to grow this economy, to restore the middle class to its rightful place, to fulfill our responsibility to make tomorrow better than today, and guarantee that the American dream...
Let's turn it off. Here's Alfred E. Obama winding up the base that abandoned him, and there's a good reason for it, because they don't believe a word he has to say. The fact of the matter is there's a controversial story. Oh, welcome to the Savage Nation. Sorry to interrupt you in your reverie and me from mine. Let's go back to the beginning. Obama's $200 million a day trip to India. This is a hotly contested issue. The government is denying that it's costing you $200 million a day to send the president, his wife and his family, and a few thousand people to Asia on a 10-day junket. And they are supported by their flacks in the news media, such as the anti-Tea Party liberal Anderson Blooper on CNN, who has never gotten his facts straight to begin with. The question is this. Is this trip to India an example of gunboat diplomacy with such a massive show of force, or is it an attempt to provoke a terrorist response? Something is wrong with this picture. But let's go to the public records about the ships, because the flacks in the media are saying it's not $200 million a day. There are no ships going there. It took an individual less than 30 minutes of searching public records on Google to find the following. Here is what's sailing. The carrier Strike Group 9 sailed from its home port in Everett, Washington, all the way to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, supposedly to promote peace, cooperation, and stability in the region, and to conduct theater security cooperation efforts to establish conditions for regional stability. What the hell does that mean? Obama's going to be in Kuala Lumpur when the ships are there. What a coincidence also that the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln, CVN-72, embarked carrier air wing CVW-2, San Diego-based guided missile cruiser USS Cape St. George, CG-71, destroyers Momsen, DDG-92, and Shoup, DDG-86, as well as USS Halsey, DDG-97, and USS Sterrett, DDG-104. They all got travel orders to travel over 7,500 miles to the Indian Ocean just at a time when the president will be there, and all to conduct so-called security cooperation efforts. The question is, none of this cost very much, did it? No, not according to CNN. But let's look into this in a little more details. What does this mean? What does it mean that all of these ships are at sea? Obama heads to India this weekend in the first stop of a 10-day trip to Asia. And you don't know this, but here it comes. It's on the top of MichaelSavage.com. 34 American warships. How many airplanes? How many people? Take a look at this. It gets worse. The Secret Service is erecting a bomb-proof tunnel with air conditioning so that the president can tour the Gandhi Museum. Gandhi would turn over in his grave if he knew that this kind of imperial presidency was visiting this humble man. A kilometer-long bomb-proof tunnel will reportedly be erected, according to the Daily Mail, on the route to the Gandhi Museum, ahead of President Obama's tour of the building on Saturday. The material that the tunnel will be made of has not been released, but officials said that the structure would be dismantled immediately after Mr. Obama and his party leave the area. Meanwhile, the furor over reports that his Asia trip is going to cost taxpayers $200 million a day has been dismissed by the Obama administration, who called the figure wildly inflated. Nevertheless, an Indian government source told the NDTV channel in India the huge amount of around $200 million would be spent on security, stay, and other aspects of the presidential visit. The claim was immediately seized upon by talk show hosts and right-wing politicians who relished the opportunity to rub salt into Mr. Obama's wounds, saying the trip was a waste of government funds during the country's recession. But for those of you on the left, I'll ask you a question. Why will the White House not reveal the true cost of the three-day trip to Mumbai and Delhi? Why? White House spokesman Tommy Vietor said, "The numbers reported in this article have no basis in reality." But he added, "Due to security concerns, we are unable to outline details associated with security procedures and costs, but it's safe to say these numbers are wildly inflated." They also claimed that the U.S. was not deploying 34 warships off the coast of Mumbai to protect the president. However, they did confirm the following, or shall I say they haven't denied the following. 40 aircraft are being involved. A staggering 40 aircraft, 6 armored cars. The president will be driven around in a black Cadillac dubbed Barackmobile, which has its own built-in communication center, allowing Mr. Obama to be in touch with the White House, Vice President, and the U.S. Strategic Command. What is he doing there? Who is he bringing with him? Obama is bringing U.S. Executives, including, here it comes, are you ready for the list? GE Chief Jeffrey Immelt. Now, Jeffrey Immelt owns NBC, MSNBC, etc., under the GE banner. Jeffrey Immelt, as you may remember from last week, intervened in England and had the Prime Minister of England backtrack on his immigration controls because Immelt wants cheap labor brought in from India to Britain. So it tells you who's really running the countries, doesn't it? And we're going to get into oligarchs a little later on the Savage Nation. We're going to talk about a book from China called Currency Wars. Currency Wars. Currency Wars. How currency as a weapon can be more destructive than physical weapons. We'll look into the Rothschild family, the richest family on earth. We'll look into the Battle of Waterloo and how the Rothschilds made a fortune by putting out false information and grabbing a hold of the British currency. We'll talk about the Bank of England. We'll talk about George Soros. And just remember this. Just remember this. In my book, Trickle Up Poverty, I allege that it was money people like this who crashed the economy in 2008 in order to panic you into electing a completely unknown man into the presidency. Did you hear what I just said? Well, okay, you don't want to hear what I said? It doesn't matter whether you want to hear what I said, because I'll tell you why. It was my book that defeated the Democrats. I am going to stand by those words. I want you to remember something. My book came out on October 5th. And the election, of course, was this week. My book was number one on Amazon, and it was number two, number three for 3 to 4 weeks. The only book that beat me was by a left-wing comedian, Flack. So you can't say his book was responsible for awakening America and bringing down the Democrats, can you? No, it was Michael Savage's Trickle Up Poverty. And that's a fact. I'm telling you it's a fact. I don't need ABC, CBS, NBC, or Fox to confirm what I just said to you. My book and your purchase of that book, your talking about the book, what you learned in that book, bringing it into the voting booth, is the reason the Democrats were exposed and they were destroyed in the last election. Now, having said that, I'm going to say one more word about my book. If you understand what happened in this election, if you understand how powerful freedom of the press is, if you understand the power of information, I ask you to grab another copy before the month is out for one reason. What happens in 2012 determines whether Obama is still president, doesn't it? The book won't be available at that time. It's going to be gone in a few months. You know that and I know that. Grab an extra copy now, put it in storage, and give it to a friend in 2 years. It's like putting gold away. Yes, it's a plug for my book, but I mean every word I just told you. Now we can move on to the number of ships. Again, I raise the big question. And this is the most important question. If the security aspects are so questionable in India, why is he going there? Why is he going there? Is this an example of gunboat diplomacy with such a massive show of force? Or is it an attempt to provoke a terrorist response? I read in the naval records that the U.S. Navy is bringing sailors into Kuala Lumpur, and they're going to release 5,000 sailors into the streets of Kuala Lumpur to go shopping. Did you hear what I just said? By their own definition, they want the sailors to go into the streets to go shopping. Are they hoping that someone kidnaps or harms one of the sailors, to use this as a pretext on an act of terrorism? In either case, there is no question that many ships, including the 34 mentioned in the articles, are being deployed for Obama's trip, and we have the evidence to that effect. Again, we will go back to the evidence on the Savage Nation that is available in the public records. Don't accuse me of digging up dirt on the U.S. government. I'm a member of the U.S. Navy League. I support the U.S. Navy. I support the U.S. military. And yet this is what was found. What has sailed from the U.S. for this trip? The carrier Strike Group 9 sailed from its home port in Everett, Washington, all the way to Kuala Lumpur. I read you the ships, didn't I? The aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln. The embarked carrier Air Wing, San Diego-based guided missile cruiser USS Cape St. George, destroyers Momsen and Shoup, as well as USS Halsey and USS Sterrett, got orders to travel over 7,500 miles to the Indian Ocean just at a time when the president will be there and to conduct security cooperation efforts. But that probably didn't cost all that much, did it? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Some of you won hard-fought victories yesterday, but some of you experienced setbacks, too. And I know how that feels. As an organizer,
you experienced setbacks. The world knows that the Democrats lost, not because anybody wanted the Republicans back, but because they wanted Obama to get a message that we're not going the way of Europe, and further, we're not going the way of the ex-Soviet Union. A skilled political analyst knows this was a repudiation of Obama's left-wing fanaticism. It was not saying we're dying to have John Boehner as Speaker of the House. It was not saying we're dying to have the same K Street gang back in power. But we have no choice, do we? We have no choice. Already they're doing exactly what I feared they would do, the Republicans. Already they gave Michelle Bachmann the shaft when she went for a leadership position. They pushed her aside for another check-pants hack. So don't expect too much from the Republicans. But at least we got rid of the Democrats. Let's pray to God that makes a difference. Now, I want to go into the issue of leadership. Yesterday, I started with you talking about what leadership means. Remember I talked about the president's tremendously powerful voice and how he exuded leadership through his persona and his voice, and how he swayed millions of people into thinking he was the man who could lead us out of this morass that America was in. Remember that? I want to now take you back in history to the time of one of the Christian crusades to regain lands that were stolen by the Muslims. And if you study the crusades in school today, you'll be told that Christians invaded Muslim lands. What you really don't know, the crusades were the first military response to unwarranted Muslim terrorist aggression. And what you also need to know is that the current wars going on around the world are wars of Muslim terrorists and their aggressions and the response of the Christian nations. You don't want to know any of that because we're not supposed to talk about history. But there's a history of seven major crusades from 1095 to 1291, and we're in the midst of a crusade right now, only most of you don't even want to know what you're living through. So let's go back in time together. We're going to go back to a leader of the Christians at the time. And that was a time in the Middle Ages. And there was a leader, an emperor, by the name of Alexius Comnenus. Everybody thought that this Byzantine emperor would lead the crusaders into battle. Now listen to this and tell me who this sounds like. But the Byzantine emperor had done no leading, and everyone from the West now regarded him as a treacherous fraud who had repeatedly betrayed them. It also was clear that Alexius was not interested in defending the Holy Land and would gladly restore it to Islam if offered an attractive treaty. This comes from a book on called God's Battalions by Rodney Stark. I'll read it to you again because when I read it, I had to put a little mark next to it with a post-it, and I said with a star next to it, Obama. Just as they assumed Alexius would lead them into battle, the Byzantine emperor, of course, had done no leading, and everyone from the West now regarded him as a treacherous fraud who had repeatedly betrayed them. It was also clear that Alexius was not interested in defending the Holy Land and would gladly restore it to Islam if offered an attractive treaty. Now, what treaty Obama will engage in to sell Israel out is the question, because it's happening as sure as I'm standing here. I have a fear that this entire trip is a smokescreen for high-end meetings that are going to occur in that hotel, and no one's supposed to know who's in that hotel. They took over every room in the hotel. Now, you can say, well, that's for security reasons. But could it not be possible? Is it not possible that this entire edifice of a trade mission, and it's probably partly a trade mission, after all, what isn't a trade mission? At the end of the day, wars are about money anyway. At the end of the day, everything is about wealth. At the end of the day, everything that a government does is about wealth, when you think about it. When you think about that, what Amsel Rothschild said is very important. One of the early Rothschilds said, let me issue and control a nation's money, and I care not who makes its laws. Let me issue and control a nation's money, and I care not who makes its laws. Now, as you know, in the past, gold was used as a means of currency. And there's a limited amount of gold. And therefore, there's a limited amount of money. But you can pretty much document what you have by the amount of gold you have. And it served perfectly as a currency. And all of a sudden, somebody invented paper currencies. And then you could make an infinite amount of money. Now, if you know even the most basic things about finance, if you have an infinite supply of currency, meaning you can print as much of it as you want, this will cause an inflation. You understand that? This will cause an inflation. So as I speak, as I pointed out in Trickle Up Poverty over and over again, the whole Wall Street chapter, they rigged the whole system to collapse in order to usher in Obama. And now they're issuing $800 million in so-called bonds. What does that mean, issuing $800 billion in bonds? What they're doing is they're printing money again. And they're going to devalue the value of the dollar again. If you have an infinite supply of currency, it will cause an inflation. And so what they're doing is they're causing inflation under the guise of issuing bonds. And this is a method to exploit wealth from the American people. By playing with the supply of money, they are decreasing the wealth of the American people. Do you understand what's being done to you?
Savage.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you.
I'm going to slow the pace down a little bit. I feel I was burning too hot. I feel like there's just white heat inside my head right now. I can't take it. So we're going to go back to the 1950s when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. And we're playing a little music from that period called I Only Have Eyes For You. I love this song. I get into a reverie, get off the politics, but I'm not going to do it because Sunday morning you have to set the clocks back. And what that has to do with what I just said is nothing. 1-800-449-8255. 40 aircraft, 6 armored cars, 32 ships for King Obama's trip. It's coming out of the London Daily Mail. The reports are coming from the Indian government. Now, a physical act that he knows something about that we don't know anything about. Are you going to believe that jerk, the pretty boy on CNN who wouldn't have a job if he didn't have deep connections to those with deep pockets? 40 aircraft, 6 armored cars, 32 ships for King Obama's trip. And I don't want to read the name of the ships again. It's up on michaelsavage.com. Judge for yourself. Whatever the number is, it's an outrage in a time of when a million people are losing their houses. Now, let's put it to you that way. All right, you want to argue over how many hundreds of million a day it's going to cost? Do a little research on your own instead of listening to schmucks on CNN. Okay? I'm trying to do your homework for you. And it's pretty depressing to see a president with this kind of imperial complex. The president has an imperial complex. 40 aircraft, 6 armored cars, and 32 ships. But then again, he's a liberal, so therefore they need more than you do. Conservatives don't need aircraft, cars, and ships to go to India. So what would you like to talk about in the Savage Nation? I mean, I've done my work for you already. You want to talk about, the currency thing I brought up? You want to talk about the Rothschilds? You want to talk about the modern-day Rothschilds who are manipulating the currency? You want to talk about how they're doing it to you all over again? You want to talk about how we're liable to wind up with the Weimar Republic, where you need a wheelbarrow full of dollars to buy a loaf of bread? God forbid. Let me issue and control a nation's money, and I care not who makes its laws. Amsel Rothschild. So, there it is. You don't want to believe that either. People are terrified right now about their mortgages. They're terrified about their 401ks. They're terrified about whether the money they have in the bank will be worth anything in a year from now. Nobody knows what's coming tomorrow with these amateur morons running the country. You look at the idiots running the country and tell me you have faith in Tim Geithner, the head of the Treasury, a guy who couldn't even sell his own house on Long Island, a putz who goes to a comedian and asks a comedian his opinion on how to run an economy. He goes to a comedian from Comedy Central and asks him his opinion on what he should do about the economy. You hear the country you're living in? A college teacher who never built a business. A college teacher who never invented anything. A college teacher who never created a service anybody ever actually bought. A college teacher is running America, surrounded by comedians, college teachers, and other inexperienced individuals. And there we are. People are wondering what should they do? Where should they put their money? I don't have an answer for you. I know what I did. A little bit of it anyway. I mean, I told you about gold, and I'm not going to, you know, push this too hard because my biggest sponsor is Swiss America because I believe in them. But the fact of the matter is, what is paper money really? What is paper money when you have a government that has no responsibility? When you have an irresponsible group of children running a country, and they don't know what the heck they're doing. And so they say, let's print more money. We have loads of programs. And after all, Queen Nancy needs to fly around on Air Force jets. Here is a woman who wrecked the Democrat Party almost single-handedly with her arrogance and her out-of-control power madness. And she says she's going to hold on now. She wants to be the minority leader. Can you believe this country, what we're living through? Let me issue and control a nation's money, and I care not who makes its laws. So what is money worth? I mean, I'm glad I have $20 bills, $50 bills, $5 bills, and $10 bills. I can still buy things with them. But when you have a government that is today printing $800 billion in dollars, I mean, they're not saying they're printing it. Don't be foolish about it. They're not going to go, we're running $800. They're not going to print $800 billion. They're doing something else. They're calling it by another name. One thing you got to hand it to the liberals. The liberals are very good at making stories up. So they don't call it printing money anymore. They call it, they have 18 different other names for it. 18 other names. And yet China's freaking out over it. Brazil is freaking out over it. Countries are saying, you can't do this. You're going to wreck the world's economy. They're going nuts over this. Pumping dollars out into the economy. The dollar is at risk of crashing and triggering a run on the banks. China is warning the Fed not to move like this. It's a huge risk. U.S. Is going to, Brazil ready to retaliate for the U.S. move in a currency war on the Drudge Report. Read all of those stories. The dollar is at the risk of crashing, triggering inflation. God forbid. God forbid that should happen. We'd all be wiped out. God forbid. Federal Reserve policies? First of all, and I don't have the time for this, nor do I claim to be the world's expert on it, but the Federal Reserve is not even a governmental agency. It's a private bank. It's a group of bankers in the Federal Reserve. Alan Greenspan was their front man, and he was in the Federal Reserve Bank. And so the Federal Reserve policies have now put the U.S. dollar at the risk of crashing, which could hammer consumers through higher prices, according to people who are in looking into this. And investors are told to brace for a much weaker dollar. And people are diversifying out of the greenback into currencies of other countries. I don't even want to tell you what to do. So they're saying that the Fed is going to embark on a program to buy $600 billion in treasuries in an effort to pump up the economy by increasing liquidity. Now, those are the key word. That's the key word. And I'm not going to bore you. I know that many of you go to sleep on this. What do you mean by increasing liquidity? Printing money. They also came up with another sharp little name created by some girl from Bryn Mawr. Quantitative easing. Your grandfather knew it as the running the printing press in the middle of the night. Okay? Al Capone knew it as counterfeiting. In essence, the Treasury Department is a counterfeit operation. No one said it but me. The Treasury Department under Obama has become a counterfeit operation. It wouldn't matter if a gang took over the country and was printing our dollars, because it comes to the same thing at the end of the day. They're counterfeiting dollars. What's the difference if the plates are accurate? If the value of the dollar is nothing, that they're printing, what's the difference between them and a counterfeiter? So you have a counterfeit government printing counterfeit currency, making a weaker dollar. Why do they do that? Why are they doing this? Well, their theory, which they probably learned over a joint and a glass of bad Merlot at the Comedy Central offices, you know, they had to cool down after smoking a J, so they drank a little Merlot up at Comedy Central, had a big laugh, and they came up with the words quantitative easing. And the Comedy Central writer probably said, look, don't say you're printing money, Tim. What you do is you say, let me think for a minute. Hold it. Pass the joint. Oh, well, let's go to quantitative easing. He's the one who writes the jokes for the comedian who you think is so smart. So Guy thinks, wow, man, that's good. Quantitative easing. That'll sell. The schmucks out there don't know what that means. I don't know what it means. They're not going to know what that means, but it'll sound like we know what we're doing. And, of course, we don't know what we're doing, so quantitative easing is what we're going to be used. So they're financing their massive spending by printing money, and they're calling it quantitative easing. Now, I don't want to talk any more about it, because that's all we can say at this point. Let's pray to God that the Republican victory, which is driving up the stock market, because finally people are breathing a little easier, they're fearing that the taxes aren't going to go up, the amount of regulations aren't going to go up. The left-wing college schmucks in the EPA are going out. They're throwing them out. Maybe the America that I know could come back to a certain extent. 1-800-449-8255. What's the date already? I don't know what year it is. Never mind the date. Today is November 5th. I'm looking at the calendar. And you turn the clock back Sunday morning. Just remember that. Who remembers fall back, spring forward? The things you have to remember in grade school is very much like the HAL 2000 days, you know, like yesterday. How much can a mind remember? Sometimes I'm wondering if I'll reach a point of overload, which I can't even work anymore. I have too much information in my head. I feel like a computer that exploded. Well, I'm close. I feel like a computer that will explode. I feel I've reached the point. You remember William Burroughs' novel, The Ticket That Exploded? I feel like the human brain that is reaching that point of overload. It's too much for me, all of this. I mean, I've really run a marathon. I better take a break, but the problem is I hate vacations. The thought of me going anywhere is worse than actually going on the radio and using my brain to this extent. So therefore, I will not take a vacation. Let's have a little rock and roll before we go to the next topic here on The Savage Nation. Give me something from the 50s that'll bring me back to a reminiscence of Love by the Sewer Plant. Maybe I'll talk about Love by the Sewer Plant is what I'd rather talk about than quantitative easing. Because in Love by the Sewer Plant, it was a different type of easing. No, we'll let it go at that. It's a family show. We know what it is. Big deal. Look what you joke about. Big deal. Why is sex still jokeful? Why is that a joke anymore? Seems so, like, old. Everyone does sex. Birds do it, bees do it. You know, why are sex jokes funny at all? Kind of icky to begin with. I don't do them. Why are sex jokes funny to begin with? It's like digestion jokes would be about the same thing. You want to talk about, like, digestion? You know, he ate that meatloaf and there it is moving down his guts? That would be about as interesting to me as talking about sex. Which is a funny line. Make it louder. That is so sweet. God, I wish I was 17. Be the same 17-year-old I was then, so what's the good of it? It's like reincarnation. See, that's the problem I keep telling you. There's no value to being good other than to be good for its own sake. What if there's no reward for it? What if there is no God and there is no heaven? And think of all the good stuff you missed. You know, but that's the problem. What do you really miss? Take a look at the people in Hollywood. Do you really admire them? You really want to be like them, all those beautiful women, all that money, all that fun? You don't want to be like them. You'd rather be driving on the Cross Bronx Expressway in a sweaty suit right now on the way somewhere that you want to go to, eating a bad meal to watch television tonight. You want to be like those guys in Hollywood. Nah. No, but the question is, why are they all so mentally ill if they all have all of this stuff, all these wise guys? Bill Maher, you know, walking around like King Tut. You really think this man is as together as he looks? I doubt it. I really doubt it. All of these guys, they put on a big act. They're entertainers. They're actors. Every day is an adventure into the unknown, as you well know. You know that. Every day is an adventure into the unknown. So, as I said to you earlier, I almost feel like talking about One-Armed Frank, Love by a Sewer Plant, Fat Al's Tuna, but I'm not going to do that. That was a previous incarnation when I was a kinder, gentler talk show host before Obama was even a word. Before Obama was even a word on the horizon of America, how did he become president? How is this possible? When I think back, when I wrote Psychological Nudity, remember? You bought it a couple of years ago, my book about my radio stories, all my family. Everyone loves it. It came out in 2008. It was written in 07. Nobody even knew who Obama was. He's now president, and he's got airplanes and ships, armored cars. How is this possible? I thought we live in a democracy. This is the kind of thing that happens in a dictatorship, where a coup occurs, and they put in some unknown nephew. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Could you specify which trip President Bush ever took, which cost $200 million a day?
Well, Lester, this trip doesn't cost $200 million a day, so if you don't believe me, which I can understand,
I'd like to believe you. I enjoy you very much.
Well, I appreciate that, Lester.
So we leave you two guys alone?
That's with the inimitable Les Consolving challenging the human gefilte fish with eyes, the spokesmouth for Obama, whatever his name is, who was denying the $200 million a day cost for the extravaganza to India and points east. Let's take the callers on the Savage Nation. By the way, there's news, as you well know, Pelosi again. You thought she was going to go home and quietly make a cannoli. Nope, she says today, I'm running for Dem leader. She will run for minority leader after resurgent Republicans win control of the House. And then there's the satisfying story of the man who allegedly urinated on himself so frequently, they got tired of the cost of cleaning it up under his desk at MSNBC with the steel door. No one was allowed in. All of these stories were leaking out, pardon the pun. And apparently they looked for any excuse to get rid of the lunatic, and they got rid of the lunatic from MSNBC because he gave money to Democrats. He made political donations to the campaigns of three Democratic candidates that violated NBC codes of some kind. They were looking for an excuse to dump him because, look, the cost of cleaning up, I mean, it was rumored, you know. We can't confirm or deny it, but he was a maniac, according to sources I've heard. Urinated under the desk, locked himself in the room. No one was allowed to go in there. So, I mean, they used this as an excuse. I don't think he's the only one in the media who gave money to candidates. I wouldn't know. 1-800-449-8255, Mike. What time? I don't even know the time. All right, let's go to San Diego. John, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. Yeah, I was talking about their trip there to India. I think that's low on the radar. I think it's going to be when he goes over to Japan and South Korea. I think he should just park all those ships off the coast of Taiwan and paint them all white, you know, to kind of tell China not to mess with those, you know, the currency and the bonds and all that, which you're threatening to do, you know.
Do you actually think that the United States of America, under the Chamberlain of our time, Obama, would actually do anything if China wanted to seize Taiwan?
You know, Clinton did. Clinton parked two carriers there and sent him a message.
Well, Clinton, by comparison to Obama, was a conservative.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, you know, remember, Clinton was a liberal, that is true, but Obama's a naked Marxist, in my estimation. It's a huge spectrum of left wing out there, just as there's a huge spectrum of right wing, ranging from Adolf Hitler to Ronald Reagan. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Thanks for the call. New York City, WOR. Bob, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was calling about quantitative easing. Those are departments in financial services that are called quants. It's quantitative analysis. And their job is to actually make bad things taste like vanilla ice cream, and vanilla ice cream tastes like, well, something else. So this quantitative.
So you're saying departments exist to cook the books?
Yeah, these are rich mathematicians Very big organizations have about a dozen or so Russian mathematicians. They sit down in the basement. They're actually known as the black box. And they come up with these calculations to make things look right so that they can then package them.
All right, so quantitative easing is a phrase that masks printing of money. Wouldn't you say that that's a simplified explanation that is accurate?
I would say that's the naked truth, yes.
All right, thanks for the call. I really specialize in the naked truth, which is why I'm both revered and not revered. The truth is something that is shocking and almost pornographic in our society of public relations talk. You know, virtually every newsman engages in what's called focus groups. Corporations engage in focus groups. That's why their statements have no meaning. Virtually everything you read coming out of the government is a result of focus group talk. And so it means nothing. I'll give you an example. Carrier Strike Group 9 arrives in Malaysia. I'm going to read you the PR thing. Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. USS Abraham Lincoln and USS Shoup arrived in Port Klang, Malaysia, where more than 5,000 sailors will visit the city of Kuala Lumpur and surrounding areas, experiencing firsthand Malaysia's rich culture and history. You hear this? This is the Navy. Quote, "This visit continues the long-standing maritime cooperation and cultural appreciation between the United States and Malaysia," said Rear Admiral Mark D. Guadagnini, commander carrier Strike Group 9. And he goes on and says, "Our sailors plan to do some sightseeing and shopping in this magnificent country." What a disgrace. The Navy now is sending troops out to do shopping and sightseeing, and then they're going to participate in community service projects. I've never seen anything like this. It's a paper Navy under Obama.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Never had any debt? Any debt of any kind in your life?
Oh, Germans. You know, we're savers. We're not spenders. Well, I wouldn't describe myself as a penny pincher. I don't mind spending money.
No mortgage? No.
No. I 15 years paid it off, and that was the end of that. Debt is not something that has ever made me comfortable. And there's national
debt. See, that's a little different than the college teacher. That's John Boehner. Came from a family of 11 children. Worked every menial job known to mankind, as opposed to Obama, who had the skids greased for him. So maybe there is hope. Now, here's Obama, so out of touch with reality, like Pelosi, that he tells a CBS show it's not the policies of his that were rejected. It was failed communication skills. In other words, he wasn't able to BS the average person sufficient to hold on to his socialist majority. Pelosi, of course, learned nothing from this. She will seek the office of House Minority Leader. I think that's very good for America, because then it gives us hope that in 2012 we'll finally get rid of all of them and we'll have, you know, a 90 percentile control of the Congress. Now, I want to talk about today something different. The Crusades and the Tea Party. That's right, the Crusades and the Tea Party. Yesterday on the Savage Nation, we were talking about leadership. And leadership is somebody who has the ability to inspire people to follow them. And I talked about Barack Obama, who was blessed with a great voice, a commanding voice, and millions upon millions of people followed him, only to discover that he was a false leader, a hollow paper mache man. And then I want to go to something from the book I mentioned earlier, where in the Middle Ages, there was a leader of the Christians named Alexius. And people assumed that this leader would lead them into battle against the marauding Muslims. But the Byzantine emperor, Alexius, had done no leading, and everyone from the West now regarded him as a treacherous fraud who had repeatedly betrayed them. It was also clear that Alexius was not interested in defending the Holy Land and would gladly restore it to Islam if offered an attractive treaty. I'm quoting from God's Battalions. And I was shocked when I read that, because I said, my God, that certainly sounds like somebody I am focused on here, a treacherous fraud who has repeatedly betrayed the people. How else do you explain that the left would not come out for him because they felt betrayed by him? How do you explain that the white people who voted for him voted against them because they were betrayed by him? You understand what I'm saying to you? So now we go on, and I say, since today is Friday, and Friday is usually devoted to a little bit of a religious talk, I want to talk a little bit about the Crusades and what we're facing right now in terms of another worldwide Muslim crusade, which is being led by Osama bin Laden. This is another crusade. And fortunately for us, George Bush understood this. George Bush was the equivalent of a bumbling knight who tried his darn best to counter the Muslim invasions, the Muslim dominations, with a war against Iraq. And we were then told that Barack Obama would take the war to the enemy. Remember when liberals kept saying that the proper place for the war was not Iraq? They kept saying, it's not Iraq, it's not Iraq. And I would ask them, well, what do you mean? Are you a pacifist? They said, no, the war should be in Afghanistan. Well, here we are, almost 2 years later, bogged down in Afghanistan with rules of engagement, as I point out in the military chapter in Trickle Up Poverty, rules of engagement that no soldier on earth could follow and hope to come out of a battle alive. And so we see again that Obama is like that failed individual in the Middle Ages who was exposed for being hollow. Now, where does that leave the people that we have? I'm sorry, my voice is going. Where does that leave the people who we have elected? We've elected our own leadership, that is the Tea Party leaders. And yet already they're being debased not only by the illegitimate vermin in the left-wing press, who did so throughout the campaign, but now we are seeing the attacks against the Tea Party winners coming from within the Republican leadership itself. Once again, we see Michelle Bachmann, for example, Michelle Bachmann being rejected. John Boehner says he's going to choose an old-line Republican hack for a leadership position. So I say I don't expect very much indeed from the check pants Republicans who, frankly, were there before Obama and are there back in power, and they were put back in power as a result of the victory of the third party, the Tea Party rebels. So where does that leave us? I don't have an answer for you right now. Let's have a little rock and roll music. Any kind will do. I'll take your calls, 1-800-449-8255 right now. That's always good. Man, we were setting the clock back Sunday morning. And a headache from his pressure. It doesn't end, Phil. It doesn't end. It doesn't end. Too old for this pressure. Too much. Going on forever. First, I was banned in England. 2 years, I'm fighting them, getting nowhere. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in lawyers' pockets for nothing. The conservatives win in England. They do nothing but make it worse for me. Same as what's going to happen here. The Republicans win, they're going to do nothing for you. They'll keep pumping money, no taxation, a dollar will crash, that's all. So where does it leave us? I don't have any. I do the best I can, I write the monologues, I sing the song. I'm just a song and dance man on the Savage Nation. Don't confuse me with being a revolutionary, I'm just a song and dance man, a mere talker. I don't know what I'm talking about. No. The important ones are on MSNBC and ABC. Those are the important ones. They know everything. So what would you like to talk about? Shall I give you some info? How about some information? How about if I answer questions rather than do more monologues? How about that? 1-800-449-8255. Any topic is fair game. Would you like to talk about the Crusades? Would you like to talk about the fact that your mind was twisted in the liberal educational institutions where you were told that the Crusades were European colonialism conducted for land and loot, and to convert Muslims by force, that the barbarian Christians victimized the cultivated Muslims. That's the storyline you've been taught at Barnard. But that's not the truth. According to experts, the Crusades were the first military response to unwarranted Muslim terrorist aggression. And look what's going on in our country today. The people of the state of Oklahoma voted in a ballot initiative, fair and square, the other day, to ban Sharia law from becoming law and being considered law in the state of Oklahoma. And yet these wonderful, fine, upstanding Muslim pressures, Muslims from CARE, the very same group that caused me so much trouble, the very same group CARE that goes after everyone who dares speak out about the truth, they're now suing the state of Oklahoma for daring passing a law banning Sharia law, saying it's discrimination against Muslims. If you want to know what audacity is, and if you want to know what provocation is, and if you want to know what legal terrorism is, look no further than Oklahoma. I rest my case. So what, do you have any questions for me? You want to make comments? Let's start in New York. Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike. Greetings from Cuomo's Socialist Welfare State. Listen, what I'm concerned about is if the president does go overseas, I really don't think he should. I think there's a chance that if while he's overseas, we could get hit over here. And I wanted your opinion on that.
Well, what do I know? I mean, how do I know a thing like that? The question is, they're taking so much of our security apparatus with them to protect him. What you're saying is you're worried about they're leaving us a little strip bare, right?
Janet Napolitano
is in charge. You shouldn't worry. They can always frisk you. Let's say you fly to see an ailing mother-in-law, you'll get frisked down to the bone.
Yeah.
So what are you worried about? You'll get frisked, but if you're wearing a burqa or covering your eyes, you get whisked right through security.
Maybe
you should wear a burqa and go as a woman, Joe. Then you can waltz through security without being frisked.
I don't fly much, Mike, after September.
You know, that's an interesting idea. Why doesn't America protest one day and everyone put on a burqa the next time they fly, called Flying with Burqa Day, and see how you're treated at the airports? I mean, that'd be an interesting way to test the system. 1-800-449-8255. Florida, Patrick, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey. Yeah, I tried to get on last night. I almost ended up on the couch again because of you.
Oh, your wife doesn't like me, eh?
Oh, no, she doesn't. It's not that. She just doesn't want to talk about things that could cause trouble, make waves. But I'm the opposite from that. And I did spend two nights on the couch, two separate nights. I got in an argument with her about the mosque and then also about the pop-up Pelosi night that when they had when the Speaker of the House was popping up every time that Obama said something.
So, that was horrible, the arrogance. So you and your wife argue, she's a liberal, you're a conservative?
That's what I keep telling her, but she denies that.
Well, if you want to sustain your marriage, my suggestion is hide all of my books. keep them in the camper or in a workplace, Patrick.
Well, I was in Sam's Club the other night, and you were almost right beside the O'Reilly house.
Oh, I beat him to a pulp. His book has been beaten down by me. That's with all of his Fox friends promoting him day and night. That is the greatest victory I've had in all of this, is beating a leprechaun. It's very personal to me. So I want to thank my listeners for helping me beat the leprechaun, putting him where he belongs, in the back of the bus. But, Patrick, were you a conservative when you met your wife?
I've always been.
And was she a liberal?
I didn't get to know that before I married her. Now it's too late.
Well, I don't think that her politics should be a point of contention in a family, by the way. In fact, some women don't like politics at all, and they don't like to argue, and most women, frankly, are liberal. Do you have children?
From my previous marriage.
Oh, well, I can go into this one. But I don't want to get involved in your situation. But the main thing is this, is that you need peace and harmony at home more than anything. Wouldn't you say that that's true?
Yes.
All right, so is it worth winning a point and proving you're right and winding up on the couch?
I was trying to stand up for what you were talking about. And
yeah,
what
but wait a minute. It's not me who has to sleep on the couch. It's you, so don't worry about me.
Well, I believe in what you speak about every day, and I got you.
Well, no, it's true, but I don't want to see you sleeping with the cat on the couch. You'll probably get cat scratch fever.
I'll sleep on the couch with one of your books if you'd send me one.
Well, if that's what this is all about, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm sending you two, one for you and one for your wife, but she's a liberal. What are you going to do if I send you two? I'll just send you one. Just hide it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
One, two, three.
Look at Mr. Lee, 3, 4, 5. Look at him jive, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee. Oh, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee.
So we are in the midst of another crusade and counter-crusade, whether you want to accept it or not. Here's a story out of England that's really frightening. A Muslim girl was jailed for 15 years for stabbing a member of parliament. She cursed the judge, shouted with her fanatic friends, and the Muslim girl who knifed the MP smiled as she got life. The judge was subjected to a tirade of abuse in his own courtroom yesterday as he jailed an Al-Qaeda-inspired Muslim woman for attempting to assassinate a member of parliament. Islamist protesters harangued Mr. Justice Cook from the public gallery at the Old Bailey, shouting, "Allahu Akbar, British, go to hell," and curse the judge. Now, of course, they're not banned in Britain, but I am. The outburst came as Rosh Hashanah Choudhury, 21, was sentenced to life imprisonment for stabbing former Minister Stephen Timms. Choudhury, the Muslim fanatic, smiled as the judge told her, "You said you ruined the rest of your life. You said it was worth it. You said you wanted to be a martyr." And so if you want to see the entire story, read it on michaelsavage.com. Take a look at the beautiful faces of the peace-loving Muslims standing outside the courtroom. Take a look at the beautiful faces of the future of England. And just rest assured that the powerful, strong men who run England are in charge. They ban an American talk show host. But these wonderful, fabulous Muslim men standing outside saying they're going to take over England, etc., cursing the judge, they're not kicked out of England. That's the country you're living in. Iraq equals the graveyard for the British troops, as one of the wonderful, fabulous-looking men removed from the building after allegedly cursing the judge and swearing at the court. That's what they imported with their labor pool. That's what the fine, sensitive, liberal Brits brought into their country for cheap labor. Take a look at what they got in the mix. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Rosh Hashanah Choudhury, who appeared by video link, she was so vile and violent they wouldn't even let her in the court, smiled as the judge said she must serve at least 15 years. It's amazing what's going on in England. They call it Londonistan, and if you think we're far behind, take a look at what CARE is trying to do in Oklahoma. There's a story about it on michaelsavage.com. And I'm not going to repeat myself. I already did it. And now we have a president, we have a defense secretary, we have a Homeland Security Department, we have an FBI chief who refuse to even identify the enemy. They will not even use the word terrorist or terrorism. So, all right, I mean, I told you all of this stuff. I mean, it's exhausting for you. You don't want to hear it. I know it's Friday. You don't want to hear it. I have a whole chapter on Obama's war and our military and our national security and trickle-up poverty. And a lot of people read the book. You know, I think by now it's close to 100,000. I don't have the exact numbers. And I'm telling you to own the book that defeated the Democrats, because I did it. That's right. I'm making that claim right now. I defeated the Democrats. I did it. Why do I say that? Because for the 5 weeks leading up to the election, or the 4 weeks rather, leading up to the election, my book was number two, number three. And the books that beat it were not at all conservative. One was by a comedian who gets his information from comedy writers. And therefore, I changed the mindset. Primarily, I'm going to say it, I know it's hard to believe, and okay, you know that they say Obama lost the white vote, and that's what the difference was this time. Because a lot of white people were hoodwinked by him the first time. They didn't like Bush. They didn't really like Obama. They didn't know who he was. They wanted no more Bush. They voted for him. But now they swung back to anyone but Obama. It's like anyone but Bush before. And that's because we're trapped. We don't know which way to go, you know. Phil in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Listen, I have to agree with you with the. I think Obama's probably trying to provoke some sort of an attack over there in India. Would not be surprised at all.
I don't know. I don't know. Is it gunboat diplomacy where he's showing force in that part of the world? I would almost respect gunboat diplomacy more than an attempt to provoke an attack. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would, but I don't...
Well, let's hope that it's gunboat diplomacy, and it's meant to scare the fanatics over there. Let's hope so.
Savage.
Bye-bye, love. Bye-bye, happiness. Hello, loneliness. I think I'm gonna cry. Bye-bye, love. Bye-bye, sweet caress.
During the break, I was reading the British tabloids and looking at them. I always get sidetracked. I read the serious stories about Muslims stabbing an MP, going to jail for life. And then I got pulled over to the right side of Camille. Kelsey Grammer's estranged wife, Camille, strips the bikini on reality show film while marriage was under strain. I click on it, you know, look at it. It's terrible. The whole you can't stay focused when you read the British tabloids. And, of course, you know, that model was picked up by Murdoch and Fox News, and that's why they're very successful. I mean, I'd like to see O'Reilly in a bikini is what I'd like to see. I think the day is going to come when O'Reilly and Hannity will have to appear in Speedos in order to maintain their ratings. Now that, you know, the women are in the ascent, and take a look at the people on The View with the brucellosis and the Turner and the Buffaloes. I think that O'Reilly and Hannity should appear on the set with a glass table, a glass broadcast table in a Speedo. I think that would increase their ratings amongst cougars anyway, or I don't know, amongst people like old men or something. I don't know how that works. That's the beauty of radio. Kelsey and his new partner, British flight attendant Kate Walsh, in New York last month. You think they're happy when they leave the wife? Look at this. Talking about their split last month, Camille told People magazine, "I was completely blindsided. I was shocked. We were together for 14 years, and suddenly he's gone. He's just gone. He basically said, I don't want to be married anymore. I started crying, and he said, oh, grow up. I said, what about our children? And he said, they'll get over it. Grammer and Walsh, that's the new girl, the flight attendant, who lived together in his New York apartment, were expecting baby girl. But Grammer and his two older daughters from previous relationships. That's where the children wind up, drug addicts. I mean, I hope it doesn't happen to his kids, but it's why it happens to children. When they have deranged parents, well, let's say irresponsible parents, who follow their id and don't really care much about the children. The children know it. And the children don't have any way to fight back except through acting out. Drugs, sex, and rock and roll, like the parents. So that's the whole mess. You're not going to fix any of this. That's why I want to just, like, drift over now. You want me to go back to the Muslim girl who stabbed the MP? Would you rather hear what she had to say? Which would you rather hear? I mean, that's why I'm reading this. If you ever looked at that article I printed up just now for the Daily Mail on Michael Savage, your hair would stand up that they don't throw them out of England. They're attacking the British. They're screaming, bring down the government. They're saying they're going to destroy them. They're calling them foreigners in their own land. They're wearing the headdresses. They got the beard. They got the skull cap. And they're screaming basically death to Britain. And they don't throw them out. They throw them out of the court, but not out of the country. They hate Britain, don't they? Oh, yeah. People are asking on the bottom, British, go to hell, but keep paying for housing, health, education, and benefits. It sounds like America, doesn't it? Then people say, so why are all these haters of Britain not deported immediately? Another one writes, every country in the world knows the UK is a hotbed for terrorists. This is the only country that protects terrorists, offers them asylum and benefits in the name of human rights. Go ahead, but I'm not allowed into England, but they're allowed to scream that hatred in the country. You got to read what this woman writes. I can't even read it to you. She goes in to visit a member of parliament and stabs him. She gets life. So they are calling for the removal of websites that feature jihadi sermons. You hear this? That's as far as they'll go? New York, Maria, WOR, go ahead, please.
Yes, purchase 5 of your books. One for
5?
Myself, and the other 4 for the Dems within the family. Holiday gifts, of course, to change their minds.
Oh, you're a smart lady, because they won't be around by the holidays. They'll be sold out again. No, you should buy them now before the holidays.
Well, like I said, I purchased 5. Because I
know... But after the Democrat debacle, the DD, after the Dem debacle, do you think your Dem relatives are going to appreciate a copy of Trickle Up?
Absolutely. They already have buyer's remorse for voting for the abomination. They
already
have it.
Did they vote against any of his policies or people he supported?
Well, they thought that they would have a better life, but now they're seeing that one of which lost their job has to have 2 jobs to make the salary for the 1 job. So by purchasing your book, it's now a reality for them what they did.
So, you know, when I said that the leader of the Crusaders in the Middle Ages, the Byzantine Emperor Alexius, was considered a treacherous fraud who had repeatedly betrayed the people, I am shocked to tell you, and I'm not happy to tell you, that even the left wing thinks of Obama as a fraud.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Whatever. But here's the secret problem, and I don't want to get ahead of myself because it's Friday and I got a headache. If they run a guy like Huckabee, you're going to have Obama again. Don't you agree with me?
He's very meek. He cannot.
Yeah, there you go. No charisma. Let's put it that way. I didn't say he's a bad guy with bad policies. He can't win. Meek. That's right. No charisma. No leadership. So now, as a woman who listens to my show, loves my show, bought my books and everything, who would you think would excite the country sufficient to win against Obama in 2012?
Get you upset with me, but the person in Florida, the Rubio,
It's interesting you should say that. It's interesting. You know, I agree he might be able to get that far that fast. I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't say no. Rubio is, of course, of Hispanic heritage from Cuba, and that's a plus with the large Hispanic population in America. Because unfortunately, it's been true for at least maybe 125 years in America that people tend to vote along ethnic lines. You know that. It's true.
Yes.
There's no question about it. They vote for a name that sounds like their own, you know, their own name. I mean, that's a reality. I know that from New York politics. The Jews voted for a Jew. The Irish voted for Irish. The Italians voted for an Irishman. Am I right or wrong?
Absolutely. And even in
that went on forever. So why is it any different? Why would you expect Hispanic people to be any different? So in that regard, yes. And Rubio could be a candidate. That's if the Republicans would accept him into their ranks, and you know, in the same way.
Tim.
You want it? You want my worst fear?
No.
You want to hear my worst fear? Jeb Bush.
Oh, please, no.
That's my worst fear. Don't put it past the Republicrats. That'd be like bringing back a Bush-Dole ticket. It could be Jeb Bush and Bob Dole they could bring back.
Okay.
No, they could do. They could do anything. They could do anything they want. I mean, they run the party. God forbid they run John Boehner. Could you imagine?
He's a great speaker.
Great speaker, but could he win for the presidency?
It's a possibility because he's very tough right now. And look at Reagan, how tough he was and how people went towards him.
All right. You raise a good point. Give him a little time. We don't know where Boehner will end up. Did you hear the interview where he said he has no debt because he paid off his house? He's German. And he said, we save, we don't spend. Now, I thought that was a very good speech.
It was fabulous, even with the large family and where he came
11
from.
Brothers and sisters. I even liked that he broke down a little bit and cried during the victory speech. I thought that showed his humanity.
Part of a man.
Should I cry on the air more to be more like the professor on Fox News with the fake glasses and the blackboards? Do you think if I cried more, my ratings would go up?
And keep talking. Keep calm. I bought five of
them. P.T. Barnum said that there's a sucker born every minute this way to the egress. I never saw anything like this. Every day he cries a this, another that. I don't know how he gets away with it. I guess there is a sucker born every minute.
Great.
What if, God forbid, the worst case scenario, not Jeb Bush, worse yet, what if Mr. Blackboard runs for office? You know, these people have such hubris, anything's possible.
No.
You wouldn't vote for Blackboard plus Palin?
You would not.
I saw a little bit of the coming attractions of Palin's Alaska. I liked it. I liked her in a seaplane with the boots and the mush and the dogs. I know there's something about it that's very basically appealing. I hope they don't run her. I like her as a person. You know, she's like a earthy kind of settler woman, right?
Well, females are not going to be elected. I'll tell you that right now.
I mean, she could gut an elk, that woman. I can guarantee you that woman would not have gut an elk and make it into a house, the fur.
I'm sure.
I mean, I'll take that over an effete guy who, you know, never shot a BB gun. How about Meghan McCain? Maybe she could run for the presidency or the vice. Yeah. Imagine that lunatic?
No, absolutely.
Can you imagine producing a daughter? How does that happen? Well, how? How? I mean, you know. Happy Valley pills, you know. I mean, I'm sorry to say it. when you have John and you have Happy Valley there, I mean, all right, we said enough. Now, you bought five copies, so if I send you another copy, would you enjoy it? Now, what's the point, right?
Absolutely love it for the simple reason, you know, I bought for the Dems, and I would love something from you. How's that?
Are you really going to give them to Democrat relatives for the thanks for the Christmas?
You have to go, of course, Christmas. I start early, October 1st, we did it, and now this is what we're going to do. We're going to change.
Well, I was going to tell people to get them now because you don't know. I mean, they may be off the shelves by then and cleaned out. All right, I'm going to send you a copy anyway of Trickle Up Poverty for Yourself right from me. Oh, my God. All right, look at this country we're in. Take a look at the country, and it's unbelievable to me. How could a guy on television, I want to take a minute, I'm sorry, I know I shouldn't do this because it's considered like you're jealous or sour grapes. I swear to God, I'm not. I have what I need. You know, I met a man years ago when I was a kid. Did I tell you about, I'm going to change his name to Irv the Undertaker. It wasn't Irv. But next door to my father's antique store on Ludlow Street in Manhattan, today it's a club district and this and that. Then it was a poor neighborhood. There were, you know, a few bodegas and wine store and slums and his store. Next door was a funeral parlor, and I grew up in the market and the funeral parlor I grew up in. I did. So I got to know the guys in the funeral parlor. They were really dignified men. They were nice guys. You know, I liked the Cadillacs that went up and down. They would go in the those cars, because they built that in the time of the Model T where you could hardly, the width of the car, you couldn't believe how they navigated a hearse into that elevator. There was less than like a centimeter clearance on each side of the fenders. And Irv would back it in with such pride, never a dent, never a scratch, nothing on the finish. And, you know, they'd pull on that rope. They had a big, like a linen thing on the elevator, like in The Godfather. And the elevator had a sound like this car, whoop, it gave a woof. And, you know, down below, they were cutting people up. It was horrible. But they took the cars. I would go in the garage with the guys while they're polishing the hearses and this and that. And you know how young guys in those days had older men to hang around with? I don't know if it's still true, but I learned things from them. So what do you say to a guy like that when you're 14? What do you talk about? 13. Girls, you know, you're shy. You try to talk a little bit around it. And you say, hey, Irv, what do you, you know, get you, hey, Irv, what do you think of this? See, what you do is you try to show him you're a man. So if a pretty girl went by, you say, hey, Irv, she's pretty nice, huh? Now, you expect the guy to, like, get into it with you and, like, be leery, like a lech like kids are, right? And this guy was dignified. He said, no. He said, Michael, I had my share. It was the most dignified statement I ever heard a man say. No, he said, I had my share. I wish to God I could meet a guy this day of any age who said, I had my share. Not only of women, of anything. We seem to live in a society where there's no one has ever been sated by anything. Not even a lamb chop is enough for them. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Come on over, baby. Whole lot of shaking going on. Yes, I say, come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong. We ain't faking.
So we liberate Iraq. Now we see suicide bombers, Muslims killing Muslims. It's a nightmare. Suicide bomber kills 66 people in another mosque. Have you ever heard of a religion like this? I never heard of anything like this. And by the way, the reason they blew up the mosque, allegedly, is because there was an anti-extremist Muslim, to his credit, who prayed there. So they killed him and innocent people. It's a horrible thing to see. Muslim killing, Christian killing, Jew. When does this end? It's enough to take a man and just you don't know what to do. You don't know which way to turn. Bring more into the country and hope that they assimilate. I guess that's the answer. Introduce Sharia law, then there'll be no violence in America. I suppose that's the next step. Just roll over completely. Anyway, here we are. It's late Friday. What do you want to talk about on the Savage Nation? The trip to India again? The planes, the trains, the aircraft. I read the ships that are going. You don't want to hear it. All right, you're not. Turn it off. Turn the show off. Turn the show off. Anderson Blooper, that nobody, doesn't do his own research. A researcher spent 30 minutes searching Google, and he found out that the following ships actually sailed. K carrier Strike Group 9 sailed from his home port in Everett, Washington, all the way to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, where Obama will be. Aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln, embarked carrier Air Wing, San Diego-based guided missile cruiser USS Cape St. George, destroyers Mommsen and Shoup, USS Halsey, USS Sterrett, all got orders to travel over 7,500 miles to the Indian Ocean at the time when President Obama would be there. So, you know, you say, oh, there's no ships. Oh, there's no $200 million a day. All of a sudden, the liberals are going to believe the government, you hear? The very same liberals who for 40 years said, don't believe the government. Don't trust the government. All of a sudden, they believe everything that the human gefilte fish, Robert Gibbs, says. The human gefilte fish with two carrots for eyes, whatever he utters is true. I mean, I hope the president is safe, but it begs the question of why is he going? If the security needs are so great in that part of the world, why go there? So the only answer is, as I rack my brain, which is giving me a headache, is that it's gunboat diplomacy. It's meant to project force onto the people in that part of the world and show them how strong we are. So in that regard, I like it. It makes me feel better if he actually is doing it for that reason. I hope to God it's not just simply because the man is exerting his own power trip and he likes the planes and the ships, as all communists do. They love the trappings of power. I don't know. Remember that movie, Dr. Zhivago? When it started with, does anyone, okay, raise your hand, make believe we're in an audience together, auditorium. Remember Dr. Zhivago, that great movie based on a novel by Boris Pasternak? So it shows the young communists, the street agitators, and you know, down with the government, down with the czar, down with the Romanovs, blah, blah, blah. And then they're fighting with the czar's policemen, right? Tsar Nikolai. And then the Bolsheviks win. And years later, there's a scene that's so shocking, even when I was a young kid. The scene is of the train, the communist train with the communist markings on a train coming through the snow. Mna, huge train. And who steps out? Who steps out? The street agitator. He's now the leader now of Russia. Oh, God, man, that's like this thing now. Who steps out from behind the 32 ships, the bulletproof cars, the airplanes? The street guy. The community organizer, Barack Obama. So it's the same kind of thing, only in an updated version. Suit and tie now, no violent rhetoric, everything's nice, I'm not a communist, I'm a Christian, I'm not a Muslim, I was born in Brooklyn, I was really born in Hawaii, I'm not really born in... The whole story, everything's questionable. Nothing's like... Solid. The whole country's built. It's like our currency. Obama's the perfect symbol of our currency today. In other words, keep printing currency. Make like counterfeiters now. Timothy Geithner is running the presses. So it's like a counterfeit currency now. Print as much of you as you want, like monopoly money. And so it's the same thing. It's like a counterfeit everything. Everywhere you turn, it's counterfeit. Counterfeit leadership, counterfeit currency. So now along comes this tidal wave. The first, it's like no one could believe what happened in this election. It's already swept under the rug by the vermin in the media. Oh, it's nothing. Oh, no, just those few radicals. Don't worry. Things will be the same. And Pelosi's running again. No, nothing changed. There's no change in America. Just mean right-wingers, yeah. Teabaggers, teabagging, begging, teabagging, begging, teabagging, teabaggers, ha, 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 teabaggers, ha, 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 teabagging, begging, teabagging. You keep pushing us around. You keep pushing the people around. You keep making a mockery of the American people who just demanded a revolutionary change in our government. I can guarantee you're going to have something a lot different than you just had on November 2nd. And it ain't going to come from me.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now, the biggest story of the day is Obama's $200 million a day trip to India. It's being denied by the government. They're not saying it's $200 million a day to send Mr. Obama and his entourage of thousands to India and Asia on a 10-day junket. But the fact is that they're supported by their flacks in the news media, such as the anti-Tea Party liberal Anderson Cooper, who I call Anderson Blooper, who made, he's never gotten his facts straight to begin with. The only reason he's on television is because he's a pretty boy with good connections. But the question is this, is this trip to India an example of a gunboat diplomacy with a massive show of force? Or is it an attempt to provoke a terrorist response? Why would the U.S. Navy set free 5,000 sailors into the streets of Kuala Lumpur to go shopping? Are they actually hoping that someone kidnaps or harms one of the sailors to declare it as an act of terrorism? Well, in either case, there's no question that many ships, including the 30 or so mentioned in the articles, are being deployed for Obama's trip. And I have the evidence today on the Savage Nation. Hey, Cooper, how about doing a little research of your own? Or taking a second to investigate, which is a word you should know as an investigative reporter. Now, here's the fact. It took someone less than 30 minutes of searching publicly available documents online to find that the ships at sea include the carrier Strike Group 9, which sailed from its home port in Everett, Washington, all the way to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, to promote peace, cooperation, and stability in the region, and to conduct theater security, cooperation, efforts to establish conditions for regional stability. Can you believe this garbage? So the ships have been put there because Obama will be there. What a coincidence also that the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln embarked carrier Air Wing 2, San Diego-based guided missile cruiser USS Cape St. George, destroyers Momsen and Shoup, as well as USS Halsey and USS Sterrett, and they also got orders to travel over 7,500 miles to the Indian Ocean just at a time when the president will be there and to conduct security operation efforts. They probably didn't cost all that much to run over there, though, right? Now, what are they all doing there? So these are where some of these numbers come from, you understand? There's more to the story. There's a bomb-proof tunnel with air conditioning that is being built by the Secret Service in order to let the president visit the Gandhi Museum. It's being reported in the Daily Mail out of London. 34 American warships to patrol off Mumbai during the visit. 250 U.S. executives with Obama on the biggest ever trade mission. $200 million Asia trip, cost denied, but it's going to be very high. We don't know exactly how much. It's also reported that a bomb-proof tunnel will be erected for Mr. Obama ahead of his visit to Mani Bhavan, the Gandhi Museum on Saturday. All the details and more on the Savage Nation. You're not going to believe it. But it's all there. It's all coming out of India. Read it and weep. That's the imperial presidency under Barack Hussein Obama while crying for the little man, the little person, the little woman, the little people. Right. Now, I want you to go to michaelsavage.com. There's a shocking article on the top right. The UN Human Rights Council is now attacking the United States. This conclave of despots of 47 nations includes notorious human rights killers such as China, Cuba, Libya, and Saudi Arabia, yet they met in Geneva to put the United States and target the United States about its so-called failings in human rights. I say to them, go to hell. And I also say, get us out of the UN while we still get out. Lap less, coast more, Michael Savage. Now, I have changed the ad copy on my book, and I'll tell you why. I have to take a minute and talk about this. It's a news story. My book, Trickle Up Poverty, came out October 5th. It was a book that hit number one on Amazon right away. It stayed at number two or three for about 4 weeks. The number one book was a pro-Obama book. My book was the single most important reason that the Democrats were defeated. I am positive about it. And I want you to understand that my manifesto for saving America should become the new talking points for the Republican Party. Close the borders, defund and repeal Obamacare, institute a flat tax, regulate Wall Street, end affirmative action, liquidate TARP, impose tariffs on China, get rid of Anchor Baby's law, use profiling to prevent terror attacks, run the country like a business, not an empire. You like any of those points? Then be sure to buy a copy of my new book, Trickle Up Poverty. It's very important that you do, not only for yourself and your family, but for America. Let's go to the bottom of Michael Savage. We see a Guatemalan citizen called 911 for a taxi and a plane ticket. I guess he knows how to use the system. a couple in Canada who won $11 million in the lottery, gave it all away. It's a beautiful story. This elderly couple in their mid-70s said, well, what you never had, you never miss. They worked all their lives. They were retired in Nova Scotia. They didn't want the money. They gave it away to hospitals, the fire department, and some family. Can you believe that story? $11 million. And for those of you who want to see Sharia law in the United States, an 80-year-old Saudi man married a 14-year-old. Hey, that's pretty nice. That's pretty nice. I could see why many liberals want Sharia law. You know who was a big loser in this election? George Soros. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Plenty of other stories on the Savage Nation website, michaelsavage.com. I don't know where to begin except where we are. Exit polls show an unprecedented white flight from Democrats. Democrats perform worse with whites on Tuesday than in any other congressional election since World War II. Thank you very much, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN. You drove them away. We read that Obama's star has faded in the Muslim world. Oh, how sad. I wonder why he didn't introduce Sharia law yet. Finally, on MichaelSavage.com, don't miss the article from WorldNet Daily about the massacre at Fort Hood and how the Army is going to have a PC celebration in order to make you accept militant Islamic views. All there on MichaelSavage.com. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Let's go over some clips for today. Here is Mr. Boehner talking about Obama's denial about the election.
There seems to be some denial on the part of the president and other Democrat leaders of the message that was sent by the American people. When you have the most historic election in over 60, 70 years, you would think that the other party would understand that the American people have clearly repudiated the policies that they've put forward the last 2 years.
And the Tea Parties he's been to.
You know, I've been to my fair share of Tea Party events, and most of them are the most normal, everyday people you've ever met, none of whom have ever been involved in the political process before. I think we as Americans ought to welcome that participation. I think it's going to reinvigorate our democracy and be a really good thing for the country.
Here is Boehner on debt.
You've never had any debt? Any debt of any kind in your life?
Oh, Germans. You know, we're savers. We're not spenders. Well, I wouldn't describe myself as a penny pincher. I don't mind spending
money.
No
mortgage? No.
No. I 15 years paid it off, and that was the end of that. Debt is not something that has ever made me comfortable. And this national debt makes me very uncomfortable.
He's uncomfortable? Well, I hope so. Listen to this from the jerk softball.
The Republican strategy of the last 2 years has been to force Obama over to the left so that he could only pass left-wing legislation or center-left legislation without the grace of a bipartisan support. They won. They made him into a lefty. That's what they wanted to do. How do you teach them they better not do that again? How do you make Republicans, as an institution, not as voters, but as an institution, to say you cannot win by screwing the other side and making it into the worst cartoon of itself?
We forced Obama to the left? Here's the jerk again.
Meet the freshman. Republican Ben Quayle, son of the former infamous Vice President Dan Quayle, came out with perhaps the most laughable and hyperbolic campaign ad of 2010. God, is he under hypnosis? Anyway, Quayle now gets his chance. He won his Arizona House race by 12 points Tuesday night.
Well, I don't think Quayle is the one that's laughable here. I think this one's going to go by the way of the one who urinates on himself from MSNBC very soon. Here is Obama, the denier himself.
I want to take a moment today to thank all of you, not just for the work you did in yesterday's elections, but for your work over the past 2, 3, or for some of you, even 4 years. Many of you joined this movement in the first place because you believed that this is a time when the decisions we make about the challenges we face will shape the lives of our children and our grandchildren for decades to come. And from the beginning, our work was never just about putting a president in the White House. It was about building a movement for change that endures. It was never just about what I would do. It was about what we as a people would do together from the ground up, one community at a time.
He wants change again?
You got hundreds of thousands of Americans involved and engaged, some for the first time, some for the first time in a very long time. You knocked on doors and made phone calls and cast your votes. You've done incredible work on issue after issue, on health reform, on Wall Street reform, on student loan reform, change that's already having a real and positive impact on people's lives. And in this election, over the past 6 months, you reached out to over 80 million American voters. All of this is only possible because you devoted your most precious resource, your time and your energy, to the hard work of change. Delivering that change isn't easy. Believe me, I know.
He must be kidding.
Some of you won hard-fought victories yesterday, but some of you experienced setbacks too. And I know how that feels. As an organizer, as a candidate, as a U.S. senator, and as a president, I've known my share of defeats. But don't ever let anybody tell you that your efforts don't matter or that your voice doesn't count. Don't ever believe that you can't make a difference. Because you have. Because of you, there's a woman in New Hampshire who no longer has to choose between losing her home and treating her cancer. Because of you, there are small business owners who can keep their doors open and parents who can look their children in the eye and tell them they're going to college. Because of you, there are nearly 100,000 brave men and women who are no longer at war in Iraq. That's because of you.
100,000 are not at war? What are they still there then?
I'm asking you once again what I've asked of you from the moment we began this journey. I'm asking you to believe, not just in my ability to bring about change, but in yours. Because we've got a lot of work to do to grow this economy, to restore the middle class to its rightful place, to fulfill our responsibility to make tomorrow better than today, and guarantee that the American dream is once again alive and well in this country we love. Together, that's what we're going to do with you.
The American dream is still alive. The latest elections prove it. 1-800-449-8255. Shall I tell you about lessons from a tuna fish sandwich? Lessons from a tuna fish sandwich on the Savage Nation. Nah, I don't want to tell you about that. I'll make it the short version. I was 9 years old. I went to work with my father, right? And then I wanted to eat. My father screamed down the stairs as I was cleaning bronze. He says, go buy some lunch. So while I was out of the basement, my heart started to race when it became clear that he wasn't going with me. I hated the thought of facing the mean streets of the Lower East Side alone, dodging the rats, the garbage, and the thugs hanging out in the street corners. I think my father saw my hesitation, but he insisted that I face those horrible streets alone. Sending me out into the byways of Manhattan was how he wanted to toughen me up. My father thought I might be too soft, you know, growing up in a safer neighborhood as we did, so off I go in search of lunch. Several blocks away was a restaurant that served no meat, just salads, tuna fish, and such. I ordered the tuna, paid the man behind the counter, and a few minutes later headed back to the store. When I gave my father the sandwich, he opened it up and saw a huge dead fly in it. I'll never forget his reaction. His face turned red. His eyes went wide as twin saucers, and the veins along both sides of his neck bulged. He looked as if he were ready to erupt like Mount St. Helens. Dad was infuriated that someone would take advantage of his kid like this. He assumed that they did it on purpose just to be spiteful. They probably did, but what did I know? Now, my father wasn't necessarily a violent man, but in that moment he looked as if he could have strangled a bear with his bare hands. He was incensed by the sheer wrongness of what he had discovered. So, my dad grabbed me by the hand and dragged me up the street, back to that lousy luncheonette. He opens the door with a bang and looks around. The sleepy customers glance up from their menus with interest at this new development. Dad spots the owner coming out of the kitchen wearing a smirk and an apron as if nothing was wrong. My father unloaded with both barrels, yelling, "How dare you give my son a sandwich with a fly in it?" The deli man said, "Don't worry, I didn't charge you for it." I learned a valuable lesson that day. I learned that there are bad people in the world who will do bad things for whatever reason, and that remaining silent when faced with wrongdoing isn't an option. It might be unpopular to take a stand. It might turn a few heads. But my father taught me to speak up in the face of adversity, which brings us to Obama's socialist revolution, which is far worse than planting a fly in a tuna sandwich, which is all the more reason you and I have an obligation to speak against the destruction he's planning of this once great country. That's in Trickle Up, pages 76 and 77. So that's not bad. You see, lessons from a tuna fish sandwich, who else could do that? It's Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Play some rock and roll. The hairy forearms of New York serve you your coffee with a turning gesture, an offering that says drink, eat, enjoy. The wiry Italian in Vincent's clam bar, the one behind the greased over register, the young kid connected who receives his deference from the spaghetti cook older than his gangster father, the spaghetti cook who looks like an old-fashioned doctor from the Bronx with clipped mustache. He actually pulls some noodles out of the pot and eats them as they cook, looking to the grimy ceiling for his tender answer. Well, they used to call it spaghetti. Now it's pasta at $10 a plate. The smoky windows of Romeo's Spaghetti now offers radios and knickknacks. It was 50 cents a plate then, in neon letters that you couldn't miss, even through a fogged-over window on a cold winter's eve. There was life. Marinara sauce that smacked of the sea. Noodles as long as your young arm. Meatballs as fluffy as your dream of them. Bread on the table you'd eat against your parents' admonitions that the meal was coming, the meal was coming. And men, some burly with black hairy forearms whose smile scared you, and little skinny guys with the look of murder on their faces, and people who slurped their spaghetti straight to their mouths from the plate, one motion like Chinese shoveling rice at mouth with clicking sticks. That was gusto before it became a beer ad. That was taste before it became a synonym for fashion. That was spaghetti before it became pasta.
Savage.
Look, my book, Trickle Up Poverty, brought down the Democrats. Let me be very clear. It's the book that brought down the Democrats. It's still ignored by the networks, but it's still going strong. And I don't care that it's wildly ignored by the media. But there are a few willing to stand up and review it truthfully. Joining us now is James R. Holland, who, in addition to being a film editor and producer, writes for BasilandSpice.com. Mr. Holland has written a wonderful review in which he says that this may be one of the most illuminating books ever written. Wow. James Holland, thank you, and welcome to the Savage Nation. What made my book, Trickle Up Poverty, jump out at you?
Actually, there's so much information in this that about Obama that you haven't seen anyplace else. You know, that you've said it so well. I know that a lot of these things you've talked about on your radio programs, because I recognized a few of them as I was reading the book, and my wife, who's a huge fan, in fact, she when she visits my daughter in Rome, Italy, she's always listening to you on the web. So she's really a devoted fan. And, I mean, this is not the Bible. But it is a very illuminating book, and you've made some very interesting insights into Obama and his agenda. I love, for instance, your bit about how just living in Hawaii changes your whole view of the world and what you can do.
Hmm.
You have such a beautiful way of speaking. You know, it's like a black Afro-American preacher. You know, the words just flow out in musical rhymes like babbling brooks. You know, it's just it's a very nice way to talk. You know, like, and you come up with interesting little phrases and nicknames for your characters and their policies and things. And it's very catchy. I kind of admire it. And one of the problems with book reviews is you really can't do the author real justice, because you got maybe 1,000 words, and that's just barely enough to hit the various subjects on the head and hardly talk about them, but try to make them interesting enough that somebody will actually get the book and find out for themselves.
Well, what did you find to be the most important part of this book?
Well, it's all important. A lot of these things I agree with. I mean, so we're on the same philosophical plane here. But it's just that you've summed them up so well. You have both discussion of the problems and the background for it, a lot of background, which, of course, the mainstream media just never touched. They still haven't touched it, and here it is, you know, 2 years later. But you have some solutions in the back. You know, you have solutions actually all through it, and you have it organized. And there's, you know, so many of them. A lot of them are going to be very difficult to do, and some of them can maybe be done fairly easily. But you've waked the people up. A lot of people who've never heard your show would find this book just absolutely flabbergasting. You know, they would be stunned at some of the observations you've made, and they'd think, oh, that's crazy, that can't be. But then as they'd read down and they'd see the logic behind it, I mean, it would just be, oh, gee, I didn't know that. Yeah, that's common sense. That makes perfect sense to me. I know that based on my own life experience. I don't have to try to figure out, gee, could that possibly be possible? It's just my gut instinct says you're absolutely correct.
There are very few in the media who will review conservative books, but you review quite a few of them. Tell me why you focus on that.
Well, those are what I like to read, for one thing. You know, I'm semi-retired, and I like to read, and I like to go to the movies, and I like to seem a little relevant still. And so if I'm reading all the time, I read what interests me. And one of the things that interests me is the current government scares me. You know, this is the first time in my entire life that I've actually been frightened of the government. Before it was, yeah, it's the government, fine, taking care of us. I'll let the experts do what they do. Sometimes they make big mistakes. Sometimes they don't. But this time, this guy scares me. Obama is an American hater. And that's obvious for anybody who really listens to what he says. He just whines all the time. But you explain in your book why this is so and what his background is. You know, the poor guy never had anything to do with capitalism. He's only heard it about it from his radical friends and from his Marxist instructors, which he says he sought out, you know. And starting when he was 10 years old, which is pretty young, you know, he's been a captive of the Saul Alinskys and the Marxist socialists.
With the most recent elections, it looks to me as if the country has moved to the right, to the conservatives. Don't you see the same?
Well, this was a very needed first step. I mean, I'm not as happy as I could have been because I live in the People's Republic of Massachusetts here. So, and of course, the machine here elected all the Democrats, even the ones that were really crooks. And the only hopeful sign we saw in this state was we went from 16 reps in the local state house to 32. So that's a big improvement in this state, which is so thoroughly a Democratic machine. Scott Brown was seems to be an anomaly, as was Governor Romney a couple of years ago. But he gives hope. But the rest of the country, that's the key. In some ways, we obviously control the House now, which means you control the purse strings. In some ways, it's a shame we didn't get rid of Harry Reid. It's a shame that we don't control the Senate. But on the other hand, we at least have enough votes in the Senate to stop most of the crazy proposals. You know, you can filibuster them with what we have there now. And it's also good from the standpoint that Obama won't be able to just blame everything on the Republicans. He's been blaming the Republicans for the last 2 years, even though they didn't have control of anything. And actually, the Congress, as you know and everybody else knows, has been in the hands of the radicals here for the last 4 years, not just the last 2 years. So it's just interesting. I'm kind of sorry that our friend Barney here didn't get beaten. He gave a really nasty victory speech. But, you know, there is hope because in the country, they're a little bit wiser than we are here in Massachusetts. And I think that the country's taken a very important first step to kind of returning to its basic roots that made the country great.
Do you think the people are waking up?
Well, I think they've been kind of shocked into it by the economy, which does tend to focus the attention a little bit. It's very difficult. We're awake, but again, this is going to be a long battle. Without the presidency and Congress, it's hard to really roll back any of the bad things that are taking place here, but we can at least stop additional ones from coming along, and hopefully we can investigate some of these czars who are in the background there, doing all kinds of harm. I think I liked your term, the termites trying to destroy the country. And people have to be made aware, because the typical person's busy working. I mean, a lot of my friends work three jobs, and it's hard to find three jobs now. It used to be you could always go down and work at a 7-Eleven or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine those jobs are even hard to find, and they're kind of dangerous too. So I think without people being aware of what's going on out of their sight, like the mainstream press just plain didn't investigate Obama. They didn't know anything about him, and therefore the American people didn't know anything about him. And in many ways, they still don't know anything about him, because, as you pointed out in your book, all his records are sealed, his birth certificates, all of this stuff, his academic records, what classes he took. I mean, somebody has to present facts. One of the chapters that I like best in your book was actually the one on the global warming scam, because you really nailed it there. And that's one of the reasons I emphasized in the review that you're a trained scientist. You're not like a lot of the other reporters and talk show hosts who really don't know anything about science.
Exactly.
So you've been there, you've done that, you've got a PhD, a couple of master's degrees, and you've done a lot of research. So you can understand the data that has to do with climate change, and you can immediately see through it. Not everybody can do that, and what's important is when you can't do that, you rely on somebody who's an expert. And the media wasn't really letting experts talk. That was another point you made in your book about keeping the experts away from Congress, you know, when Al Gore was testifying. And I thought that was important to point it out, and I thought it was very important that the facts you pointed about some of the other sources for dissent about global warming, like the 9,000 members, I think it was, of the meteorology, the weathermen, society, you know, seeing through it right away. And somebody has to point it out, and I liked your book because you, again, pointed that out. Oh, that wasn't one of your longest chapters. And then you gave your sources in the back, and you also have an excellent index, too. And it's always nice in these books to find an index so you can look up something in particular. And, you know, it was an excellent book.
James Holland, thank you for being on The Savage Nation.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed being on it.
The midstream media pretends that I, Michael Savage, do not exist, and that my millions of listeners like you, do not exist. But Trickle Up Poverty is the book that brought down the Democrats. Don't ignore it. Read it. Get the word out. This is The Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
What happened last night? My dog Teddy bit me. I know it's a shock and a heartbreak to most of you. My little poodle, man's best friend. I mean, it's almost like a man bites dog story, isn't it? It's sad. It's heartbreaking. I didn't put him down. I didn't do anything like that. But it was so shocking. It was an anomaly. It came out of nowhere. And all I could think about today was, I got the little, you know, like the mouth print on my hand. I kept saying, what the hell is this metaphor? The metaphor is let sleeping dogs lie, in the sense that we were lying in bed watching television, and he was at the foot of the bed where he normally is. And normally while he's sleeping, I play with his feet or whatever. I touch him, just, you know, talk to him. I don't know, whatever you do with your dog, he comforts me. All of a sudden, he snarled. He turned like a monster. And I said, stop, and he bit my hand. Well, I had a choice right then and there. I could have hit him, which I didn't. I was going to roll him up in a blanket and carry him out and throw him out in the garden in the blanket. I didn't do that. I mean, I wasn't afraid of him, but I felt terrible because it was like my best friend bites me. What the hell was going on? Instead, what I did was is I left the bedroom and I said, come out. And I shut the lights and he followed and I locked him out and that was the end of that. And then he was, of course, shocked that he had done it. Dogs are really crazy, but I know dog behavior. The point of the story is, as I was riding on my bicycle this morning, I was thinking to my maker the following. I said, what message have you sent me from the other world? What message are you sending me from the other side? Because I see animals as spirits, and I see these little furry angels as somehow guides, soul guides. I mean, in that sense, I'm a primitive. I understand that. But that's the way I'm made. Okay, it's the way I've evolved. It's the way I think. I said, there's got to be a bigger meaning. I'm the kind of guy who believes everything happens for a reason. Okay? What was the reason? What? All I could think of is, well, go back to the simple adage, let sleeping dogs lie. Now, many of you are asking me to do a Bible thing because it's Friday and because I've been off schedule for 3 weeks. I'm going to read you the Ecclesiastes because it is Friday, and I'm going to sort of get back to regular programming starting today. Many of you don't even know Ecclesiastes. He's not as bad a guy as you think. He's not as frightening as you think. No one even knows who he is. But Ecclesiastes said this, a good name is better than precious oil, and the day of death better than the day of one's birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. Now listen to this one, those of you who are depressed, you don't even realize your depression is your friend. And every time you medicate yourself, you're actually fighting with yourself. Vexation is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance, the heart may be gladdened. Do you understand this? That all of this medication is an attempt for you to bury your own soul? Your soul is crying out with sadness for the world you're living in. Your soul is crying out for the horrible, degenerate scum that run this country. Your heart is breaking to see a once great nation broken over the knee of vermin. You look at the filth pumped out of Hollywood. You look at them dancing as though ancient Roman Romanovs. Rahm Emanuel flies to Hollywood, and he dances with these degenerate gold idol worshippers to bring money back to Chicago. Doesn't that make you feel sick? Doesn't that depress you? Ecclesiastes say, vexation is better than laughter. For by the sadness of the countenance, the heart may be gladdened. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning. But the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. Take a look at the degenerate sluts in and out of rehab every day. You think they are happy? You think the whores of Hollywood are happy? The degenerate drug addict whores are not happy? The heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. Does this define you, what I'm about to read to you? Thou shalt eat but not be satisfied, and thy sickness shall be in thine inward parts. And thou shalt conceive, but thou shalt not bring forth. You know, that defines a lot of what's wrong with America today. We eat, but we're not satisfied, so we have to go to idiotic restaurants where they put absurd combinations to attract your attention. But the food stinks. And although you may be outwardly healthy and have abs, and you run and you look healthy, inside you're rotting. Your soul is rotting. And why is there so much sterility in the United States of America? Thou shalt conceive, but shalt not bring forth. Ooh, that's pretty amazing. It's almost like biblical in its way. And the godly man has perished out of the earth, and the upright among men is no more. I'm not better than you. I'm the same as you. The same as you. Absolutely the same as you. I'm just reading you stuff written by better people than me. I have to read it once in a while to keep myself sane, to realize I'm just like you. Now, here's something I have to read to you because I think it's newsworthy. It's from Zechariah. This is where I think he predicts a nuclear war and where the Bible predicts what happens. And it's against the people who are trying to smite Jerusalem. And before I go into this, don't think I'm a great supporter of every Jew in Israel or that I love every Israeli. Because I've said this before, I've never met an Israeli I liked. I got to say, I mean, up front, I like Israel conceptually, but I don't like Israelis. It's not that I don't like them on purpose. But they have to be. They come from a very tough neighborhood. They're like Jewish people from Brooklyn from the 1930s. Like if you're trying to get on a bus with them, they'll give you the elbow and throw you off. But they have to be because they're around worse people than themselves. So here's what the Bible says in Zechariah. It says, and this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. If that is not a description of nuclear holocaust upon Iran and upon the enemies of the Jews, I'd like to know what is. And it shall come to pass in that day that a great tumult from the Lord shall be among them. This is amazing to me. And Judah also shall fight against Jerusalem. And the wealth of all the nations around about shall be gathered together. This is the Savage Nation with God.